My name is Mike Elgin, and this is my Food and Technology Podcast number 2. My guest this week is Lucian Copeland. Pull over and listen, folks. Here comes the Fatcast. Lucian Copeland is one of the founders of Null Space VR, a startup that's building a haptic jacket and gloves for feeling and controlling the action in virtual reality. It's 2016, and we find ourselves on the brink of the biggest culture-changing technology revolution since the internet itself. Interactive virtual reality will let us go anywhere, do anything, or be anyone. The revolution will be brought to us not only by the platform companies and game developers, but by a new generation of peripheral makers creating human-machine interfaces for all our senses. Like so many tech startups, Null Space VR was born on a university campus. The founders are students at the University of Rochester in New York, and they're showing their creation for the first time ever this week at CES in Las Vegas. Here's my conversation with Null Space VR co-founder, Lucian Copeland. Lucian, welcome to the Fatcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. Now, you're one of the founders of a brand new startup called Null Space VR. Tell us about Null Space VR.
So Null Space VR is a jacket and gloves that lets you feel virtual reality. Lets you reach out and touch virtual objects when you're wearing a virtual reality headset like the Oculus or HTC Vive.
So in addition to providing haptic feedback and this, a sense of feel and touch and sensations, does the Null Space VR jacket and gloves provide feedback back into the system so that the game or whatever it is you're doing knows the location and movement of your arms and torso?
Yeah, that's right. So the Null Space system contains its own tracking system. That's part of the theme that we're following with the suit, which is we don't just want to give the user feedback about what's happening in the game or experience, but we want them to actually be able to feel objects around them, have this spatial VR experience. So where you are as a person matters in that case. You need to know where your arms are to know when you're reaching out and touching a virtual wall, for instance. And so we've included both haptics and tracking in the suit to achieve that.
Now, you're at the University of Rochester in New York. How did this company and how did this idea start with you and your co-founders?
So the idea was originally created as a entry to the Intel Cornell Cup competition, which is an intercollegiate competition. Our first founder, Morgan Senko, had the idea. His brother had come back from deployment in Korea and had tried out a Kinect game, sort of one of these dodgeball clones, and had found the experience really disorienting. Had been waving his arms kind of wildly trying to interact with the virtual world. And he had this idea to try and put together a system where you could feel the balls in this virtual game of dodgeball, feel the objects in the virtual world. And what we realized pretty quickly, you know, after working on this system, which started out as just like a pair of gloves with these haptic motors on them, is that the real place for this was going to be virtual reality, which was just sort of starting to come into its own at the time. It was, you know, the Oculus was just starting to come out. We were just starting to see this industry revival, and we realized that that was really where we needed to take this.
What kind of time are we talking about? Is this 2-3 years ago?
About 2.5 years ago.
Okay. And you guys have cobbled together initially from gardening gloves or something like that, I understand, all the way up to the point where you're 3D printing your prototype. Can you talk a little bit about the development of the physical hardware?
Yeah. So we did start out indeed with a pair of gardening gloves, which had some embedded motors on them. They're little vibration motors like those you'd find on a cell phone. So, you know, we can command them from a computer. And initially that was very simple, you know, binary, turned it on and off when you touch this virtual punching bag, which was our first demo. And then we realized we want to make it not just about the human interacting with the world, but also the world interacting back with the person a little bit. And so we moved it to be this full body jacket sort of thing, which we built on this sort of track suit. And that it worked really well. There were, you know, some flaws in the system. It wasn't quite as durable as we'd hoped. It wasn't quite as breathable as we'd hoped. And so, you know, we took that to the Microsoft Imagine Cup and to the Intel Cornell Cup again in the following year and demonstrated it there and got a lot of user feedback. We've had about probably over 200, 300 people try the system in its various stages over the last couple of years. And all of that has come into what we're calling our Mark II prototype after the Mark I, which was this first full body system, which has really a lot of new features. It doesn't just activate motors, on an on and off kind of thing anymore. It can really do a lot of texturing. It can do, all sorts of elaborate stuff. And that's over the summer, or actually sort of last spring semester, if I can still use the term, was when we decided this is really something we want to sell, to bring to consumers.
Will users be able to see their own hands within virtual spaces?
Yeah, so we actually already have that. Right now the demos we have is, you can enter this virtual world. We have a, virtual box or a virtual game of dodgeball. And you can look down, and right now the system uses a variety of different third-party cameras. So we've used the Kinect a lot, we've used the Leap Motion a lot, and now we're moving into our inertial motion system, which means that we use gyroscopes that are mounted on the suit and provide that tracking that you need. And so you can look down and you can see these, right now there's sort of these robot-looking skeleton hands, but we can port it, we can make it, any kind of video game character sort of appearance, or even... use a one of my co-founder Jordan wants to take 3D scans of people and put them into the game as their own entity, so they can see themselves as themselves.
I love the fact that you started with dodgeball. Of course, nothing is a better opportunity to provide a sense of impact than getting smacked in the torso with one of those red balls. That's wonderful. I'd like to try that one of these days. Now, when does your Null Space VR jacket become available, and how much do you think it'll cost?
Well, we're proceeding on that just as in terms of how many we can actually produce. So we're getting actually some of our first development kits out to developers in January. We're actually working with a couple of folks right now who are interested in using the suit to develop with and try things out with. And we're really starting with developers because we know that at the end of the day, what's going to sell this suit is not going to just be, oh, the cool factor. Hey, it lets you touch virtual objects. It's going to be what games actually exist for them. Can I play using Null Space? What's going to be enhanced by Null Space? And so we're starting with developers, and we're going to be selling to them over the coming year and getting a lot of feedback from them. And then eventually we want to take it to the consumer market. But, we want to make sure that we're doing a lot of iterating and doing a lot of making sure that, this is the right product and this is the right price point, be able to scale properly to get it to, prices that consumers can afford and that are comparable to that of a game console.
You recently made your API available. How is the developer interest in that?
Well, we actually have had a good deal of developer interest. We've reached out to a lot of Oculus developers, which is still a developing and a growing community right now, because for the most part...
No pun intended.
Sorry?
That it's a developing community, isn't
isn't mind. Quite as developed as it could be. Haha, sorry. Excuse me. And we're seeing as it grows, and it's going to grow a lot more as the Oculus Consumer Version 1 is released, and as Valve's new HTC Vive is released, we're going to see that community grow a lot. But yeah, right now we've had close to 150 downloads of the API, and we're looking at seeing that number grow pretty significantly as we reach out to more folks and get more people interested in trying actually being able to use the hardware with the API.
Are you also looking at the Sony PlayStation VR?
We'll look at any hardware agnostic when it comes to the headsets. So you can use any headset as long as it works with the game engines that we support, which is currently Unity and then hopefully Unreal very soon.
Now you're entering into this market that is based entirely on another market, virtual reality, of course. Mm-hmm. And we're in the middle of a kind of potential revolution. People have been waiting for Oculus Rift, as you said. That waiting period has been, 4 or 5 years now since they first came up on the radar. And they've been developing that. Other platforms have been coming out. It's not super clear what the market's going to look like. I think we can expect that there will be two basic markets. One would be the smartphone version, like Google Cardboard or the Samsung Gear VR, which itself is based on the Oculus platform. But still, there's the big gaming console style VR that represented by Oculus Rift and PlayStation VR, etc. And then there's the VR Lite represented by Google Cardboard. And you guys almost certainly are going to be basing your success on the higher end. What is that market look like at this point? What is the market like for haptic gear, haptic suits, haptic everything? Do you think this is going to be a huge market with thin margins? Is it going to be a tiny market with large margins? What are you looking at when you look at the future 2-3 years out for your product and its ilk?
Yeah, so I mean, the way we like to think of it is we don't think of it so much as mobile VR versus console VR, but really interactive versus non-interactive VR. And so, you know, on the one hand, you have VR devices that are really going to be used mostly for watching things. So watching movies, watching these non-interactive experiences where you don't actually have any control over the games that you're in or the movie or whatever else you're in. You're mostly there for a social reason or an entertainment reason. And then you're going to have these VR devices, which are really intended for you to step into the VR world and actually enact your will on it, so to speak. It'd be able to change things in VR, be able to create things in VR, be able to fight things or whatever. And we're going to see both of those grow a lot, I think. But we're definitely pitching on the success of interactive VR, because we think that that's where VR is really going to shine, is when you can get up and move around and when you can see things in three dimensions and interact with things in three dimensions and see yourself in the virtual space. Those are going to be the experiences that really appeal to people. Not that you know, VR movies and all that kind of stuff isn't going to appeal to people, but when you can interact with things, that's what's going to really set things off. And as far as, you know, how big that market's going to be, well, we've got projections from Piper Jaffray that are looking at 12.2 million VR headset sales in the next year. Numbers like 500 million sales by 2025, you know. I mean, really, really optimistic projections of how VR is going to perform in the long run. Are those going to turn out the way they are? Or the way they're projected to, is it going to be even crazier than that? I mean, I think that really comes down to what kind of content we make for it and how appealing we can make those experiences. So we're not sure, but we think we can be a good step in the right direction to making it a sustainable long term.
What are the non-gaming applications? I would imagine training, military, physical therapy, maybe. What are some of the other non-gaming applications for your product?
Well, you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, simulation therapy, these are things that actually VR is not just poised to be used for, but it's actually already being used for. And we're aiming for the gaming community partially because it's the newest market. It's actually where the most innovation is happening, you know, and the lowest price points are. And our suit is really optimized for cost, so it works the best there. But in the long term, we do want to, you know, enter these other runners in the in providing, you know, haptic feedback treatment for, say, PTSD veterans, and doing immersion therapy for PTSD therapy for PTSD victims, you know, where you reenact these scenarios in a safe space and where you can use, you know, haptics or any other kind of immersive technique to make those experiences a lot more powerful and to make that therapy a lot more powerful. And then, you know, in a similar vein, using it for things like military or emergency personnel training, seeing what ways it could be used for, you know, training astronauts or training military personnel to, you know, deal with stressful situations. And, you know, the key to those is just having a really, really powerful product. And we're confident that we can get there. But we want to incubate it with people who are making the most content, which right now is gamers.
All right, before I cut you loose, I want to ask you, we talked before the show, and you told me that you guys have gallons of Soylent lying around. Soylent, of course, is a food replacement kind of food product that's being backed by some of the technology venture capital. What was your experience with this Soylent product? What did you think of it? How did it make you feel? How did it taste? Why don't you weigh in on Soylent?
Oh, man. So to start with, I really hated the idea of Soylent because I really like food. I'm just going to be upfront about that. I love cooking. I love eating. I love going out for dinner with my friends. You know, if a party doesn't have good food, I'm not going to go, just like straight up. I mean, I love eating. And so the idea of like replacing eating was just so unfathomably awful. I didn't think I would ever enjoy it, but you know, Having tried it, you know, we took the first thing out and we shared it around and we had a couple glasses and you know, tried the stuff out, and everybody thinks it's going to taste awful. It just tastes like oatmeal. That's long and short of it. You know, it doesn't taste awesome because, I mean, oatmeal doesn't taste awesome, and it doesn't taste bad either. It just tastes like oatmeal. And when you realize that, it's just like, well, you know, there are mornings when I eat oatmeal. And I don't particularly like oatmeal, but I eat it because I need to eat something and I'm hungry and I need sustenance to get through the day. And, you know, I might as well just like, you know, whip together this fast, cheap thing. And when you think about it like that, the whole concept becomes, you know, less unappealing. You know, you can, it's your oatmeal. And it's a lot healthier than oatmeal, so there's that. You know, it's something that you can really just grab and go. So that let me enjoy it a bit more, and I ended up having it for breakfast quite a lot, especially, you know, during work heavy runs. But I definitely don't use it for everything. I don't drink it for every meal the way that some folks have. And you know, I don't think that's the best use for it either. It's just it is your meal for when you really don't have the time for a real meal and you don't want to eat oatmeal.
It's not really made out of people, is it?
I'm pretty sure it's not made out of people. You'd have to check with the founder for that.
That's reassuring. Yeah, and even the founders don't eat it for every meal. They use it. Sometimes they tout benefits that include not only health but also environmental friendliness, and it's based on algae and other things that they, you know, hope to be farming in the future and so on. It's an interesting startup from a technology point of view. I'm with you though. I like food. I like real food, and I haven't even found myself wanting to so much as try it. But and how did you guys come upon all of this Soylent that you've got?
Well, so we actually just wrapped up our participation in the YC Fellowship Program. That's the Y Combinator Fellowship Program, which is a alternative program to their main program, which is a 12-week program where they accelerate startups, software startups particularly, and turn them into big companies. And they had this smaller program, the YC Fellowship, for companies that were very much pre-main YC YC program stage. So we were, you know, we've been small for a while. We still have a lot of growing to do. It was a perfect fit for us. And we got hooked up with a couple crates of Soylent since then, you know, used it to kind of meet our crunch deadlines for the program. So it's certainly been an experience working with them. It's been an experience working with Soylent, I guess. We like it. We'd like to see it in vending machines. It sure beats a Coke, after all.
Absolutely. Well, what doesn't? a handful of sawdust is better than Coke. All right. Well, Lucian Copeland, I want to thank you for coming on the FatCast and sharing with us the details of Null Space VR. We'll be looking for you guys in the new year. And I'm sure that I speak for everybody who's listening to this when I wish you all the best success in your venture ahead. And I think we're all really excited about virtual reality and all the different opportunities and experiences that's going to bring into the world. Thank you, Lucian Copeland, for joining us today on the FatCast.
Thanks very much for having me.
I'd love to hear from you. Email your ideas and feedback to mike@elgin.com. Thanks for listening to my weekly food and technology podcast. My name is Mike Elgin. And there goes the FatCast.